I present the Prophet of the Almighty Baller.
Whatever. These are both amazing individual teams. What do you think about this idea that, I mean, LeBron has 2 championships, right?
Yeah, that's what they say, yeah.
Well, like, does he?
I haven't seen them personally. I've seen pictures.
Oh, I said, does LeBron have 2 championships?
Yeah, I'm saying I've seen the pictures of them, so I believe.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I was hoping that you were making that joke because it's hilarious. well... I assure you that they were, in fact, championships, man.
well, look, some people even doubt the landing on the moon and stuff. We have pictures of that, so you don't know.
Yeah.
Pictures, you know.
Or like Australia, you know. Have you ever heard that philosophical thing? It's like, have you ever been to Australia?
That's
you
right. That's
might
right.
not be there. Who knows? so, did you hear Elon Musk said a couple of days ago that, and I think he said it like not jokingly, but sort of to be provocative, that the world is probably the result of a computer program run by a like hyper intelligent race. That's what the universe is.
Yeah, I think. I think that man had a lot of problems. I think. Yeah, I think that's what he's sort of like that guy with the started the religion. That guy with the computer science religion. What's his name?
Oh, L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah, I think, you know, they're just trying to make money every way they can, but...
One of these days, Teslas are going to turn against us. LeBron has won 2 championships in his career, and if the Warriors win this go-around, then that will be Steph Curry's 2nd championship. What do you think that means? I mean,
I think he'll still be... I think he'll still be older or about the same age LeBron was when he won, too, so...
Yeah,
you know, I think it's really, you know, it's really kind of hard to judge. I mean, look, Steph Curry is in an ideal situation, right?
Yeah,
I mean, he's won championships on a young team that's not getting old. You know what I mean? Nobody has any physical problems. You know, I mean, I think Bogut.
Well, hey, I mean, like Miami was in an ideal position when LeBron went there and won.
Well, remember the last year LeBron was there. I mean, to be honest with you, if Dwayne Wade looked the way he did this year, I don't think LeBron leaves. But Dwayne Wade looked like, you know, he's falling apart.
But he didn't win that year.
He did not win that year. No, I'm saying if Dwayne Wade looked the way Dwayne Wade looked this year in 2014 finals, right? If he looked like he still had a few years left in him and could be a big playoff contributor. I mean, he was amazing these playoffs. I know, you know, he was incredible.
Yeah, he was.
But LeBron's last year, Dwayne Wade was basically, it looked like he was close to retirement. I mean, he was taking off every 3 games, I think. He was taking one game off. And then in the play, you know, so it was basically LeBron and, you know, Chris Bosh. And then the Heat owner was too cheap to want to go over the luxury line or whatever. And they cut Mike Miller or they amnestied Mike Miller, which really bothered LeBron because his deal was that they were going to pay whatever it took to win the championship. And for some reason, LeBron thought that Mike Miller is integral to winning a championship. I don't know where he got the idea. He's not the best judge of talent, by the way. But but the Heat were in a situation where, like you were saying about the Cavs, amazingly, the Heat weren't in a much better situation than the Cavs were when LeBron left, at least by LeBron's, you know, assessment, right?
Well, okay, so that sort of supports my point, right? You're saying, like, well, Steph Curry is in a perfect situation. Like, LeBron chose the perfect situation when he went to Miami. And then after that dried up, he then chose the next perfect situation.
Well, it's not the perfect situation, let's be honest. Because, that wasn't a team that was built. The Warriors, okay, their three best players were drafted. You know, they drafted their three best players. So they have incredible chemistry. They're all in their mid to late 20s. The Heat were not in that situation. I mean, you know. So it's not exactly the same. But with the Cavs, you know, I don't think LeBron went to the best situation with the Cavs. I mean, there were other options. There were other places he could have gone. I don't think this would have been... It wouldn't have worked out. Okay?
Yeah.
But... if you're looking at it from kind of a big name player type perspective, the Rockets, right?
Well, they didn't have James Harden then.
No. The 2014, I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. I think
my point is there were a number of teams that had cap space that already had a couple of all-stars. Like, I mean, the Cavs, they had Kyrie and a bunch of question marks, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, look... Steph being drafted by that team, developed on the team, having a coach who not only has the knowledge of the game, but the temperament to withstand all the ups and downs of the playoffs because of all his experience. I mean, really, I don't...
Are you talking about Mark or Kerr?
Oh, no, we're talking about... Mark was pretty good. But you know, Mark... Look. Let's be fair to Mark Jackson. He took them someplace that not every coach could do. And then he handed the team to Kerr, and Kerr took him a little bit further. That's not a big deal. I mean, that happens all the time, right? I mean, look at in the NFL, I remember Tony Dungy. He took the sad sack Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who were always one of those teams that won one or two games a year. He took them and made them, you know, playoff contenders, or got them in the playoffs. And then John Gruden comes in and he makes them, he's a better coach than Tony Dungy probably. And so that's, you know, you have to recognize the contributions of those coaches who got the franchise to a certain point that a great coach could finish the job, you know. Anyways, Steve Kerr, look, I don't like assessing Steve Kerr as saying he's one of the top two or three coaches in the league because it's been such a short while and all that. But if we look at it in terms of fit, you know, Steve Kerr's mentality, his approach to the game that he learned from Phil Jackson, you know, the ball movement, all that stuff, and his temperament, something that really, if you're a three-point shooting guard and you want the mentality of someone who understands that and the guy, you know, who understands what it means to win in the playoffs and, you know, to stick to your guns and continue shooting threes all the time, who's better than Steve Kerr, you know?
Me.
Oh, you're saying anybody could coach the Warriors? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying I'm fantastic.
Oh, I didn't know because you didn't put your name in the coaching the hat or whatever. I didn't know you were...
They called me. I was banana boating with Chris Paul and LeBron, so I couldn't pick up the phone. But
you didn't put your name in the coaching the hat.
I guess you already said that Steph Curry wins, then it's the ending of the LeBron era, which, I mean, I think that that's a little bit hyperbolic too, but... You said the Warriors are the perfect situation and the Cavaliers probably, or the Cavaliers aren't. It's interesting because LeBron constructed this Cavaliers team to sort of fit around it perfectly, but then the Warriors came out of nowhere and they're, you know, the best team. It's either them or the Chicago Bulls. So I think that, like, at least back then he couldn't have known, right? Or he didn't know, but... The Warriors, we can both agree, are probably lined up to take out the Cavaliers, right? Like, what do you think? Do you actually have, like, a prediction you want to put out? Like, 5, 6, 7 games?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Cavs, they don't shoot the ball as well on the road, I don't think, as they do at home, you know, in these playoffs. I mean, look, in the playoffs, they're a different team. The way they're shooting the three... I think they're shooting, making 4 more threes per game, you know, before the Warriors game.
Yeah, totally.
I think the games where they really went crazy were at home. So we haven't really seen, my point is we haven't really seen their best game yet, you know. But at the same time, the Cavs, what do you do? I mean, look, if I'm the Cavs, I put Kevin Love on the bench, personally. Think about it. You know, you put Kevin Love. I don't know who you start in place of Kevin Love. I mean, you can't put Mozgov. I don't know who you're going to put. Maybe you put Channing Frye. I don't know.
But again, I think the answer here is me.
Okay, yeah, see, I haven't considered that because I think the playoff rosters have to be... I think there's a rule or something. You have to be on the playoff roster before a certain date. But, you know. But, but you have... My point is this. Is Kevin Love, you know, let him come in with the second unit and be the focus of the offense. Let him, you know he's getting the ball in the post. Let him do his game. Let him go back to his Minnesota days, right? And he's playing against backups, so his defensive liabilities are less exposed, you know. But, I mean, unless they make some extreme adjustment, I mean, they might have a game or two where they shoot lights out.
Yeah.
You know, I could see that. They might have a game or two. I mean, I think Steph has seen that he doesn't have to score the ball for them to win necessarily. I mean, you know, he's a great passer. It's just the attention he draws, they can still score even if he's missing, you know. But yeah, Steph Curry might have a bad game or two if you know, Dele doesn't get suspended for, you know, punching people or whatever, and Dele, you know, is on Steph. Steph might have another one of those kind of game down, you know, game or twos.
Yeah.
So I see the Cavs winning, you know, a game or two, but I don't see how they can keep up offensively and defensively with that team. I don't see the Warriors losing four games out of seven to anybody, you know.
Yeah. So a whole bunch of great points there, and I think that, you know, implicit to a lot of the points you made are probably the argument that I would make about the Cavaliers. So you said, like, they're going to be best at home, and they're just going to have at least, at minimum, one of those games where they just run, you know, they just shoot the lights out in a way that you just can't contend with it. Basically, a little bit like what the Warriors were to them last year, where it's just like the Warriors hadn't fully developed their defensive identity around Draymond and constantly switching. Of course, they were amazing, they were the best defense of the league, but they were really creating their defense and their offense from just this ridiculous three-point shooting, and the Cavaliers can win at home that way, for sure. I think that it's interesting, and I think what it's going to come down to is that Tyronn Lue isn't thinking on this level, but we'll have to see. It's really hard to know.
You know, the good thing about Tyronn Lue is that, you know, I think he said something, I read it, I didn't hear it, but he said something to LeBron, like, you know, very, very bad language, like, please do not talk. You know, I don't know what to say, because there might be some, like, you know, some kids watching the show. But he said some bad language, like, LeBron, you know, please don't talk. You know, I'm talking, I'm the coach, so you're not...
Well, I've got bad news for you. I'm going to put in the soundbite right here.
Shut the f*** up!
All right, yeah, so, okay, so there you go. So, you know, Tyronn Lue, please watch your language. You know, a lot of kids watching the basketball, but...
Well, we're clean. We bleep everything out.
Yeah, so they're not going to hear anything then. But, yeah, but, so... With Tyronn Lue, the good thing is he doesn't back down from anybody, you know? He has that kind of personality. And he benched Kevin Love after his hot start in the playoffs. He benched him for the entire fourth quarter of one of those Atlanta games. For Richard Jefferson, right? I mean, Richard Jefferson, I love the guy. But, you know, Richard Jefferson came into the league basically for his athleticism. Now he's 35, 36 or whatever. I mean, you only start Richard Jefferson because he's a vet. He knows how to conduct, you know, how to carry him. But my point is this, is that they benched Love, and that didn't affect the team chemistry. Nobody got upset because Tyronn Lue has that kind of personality, right? Next game, yeah. Kevin Love came in and he was great, if I'm not mistaken, right? He had a bad game. They benched him in the fourth quarter, and then they came back. They won the next game, right? My point is this, is that if Tyronn Lue sees that he has to make a radical adjustment, he can do that. He's the type of guy who can do that.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. And I think that if he has that realization, he will make that change.
But what does that change? Like, what are possible changes that could, you know?
Well, yeah, so...
They need to keep up offensively and defensively.
You can't make all of these adjustments, or I guess I'll talk about a few. I guess the first one that I'll sort of introduce as a possible idea is the one that you already introduced as a possibility, which is trying to replicate, coming off the bench, the Minnesota Timberwolves, right? Because what you saw in game one is that there was this lineup that the Cavaliers would play, which was LeBron and then all the bench people. It was Dele, LeBron, it was either J.R. Smith or Iman Shumpert, and then Channing Frye and, I don't know. Yeah, it was bench unit plus LeBron James, and the best plus minus in the league, because they were playing against the other team's bench lineup and really exploiting it, because the Cavaliers bench had all the shooting that they could put against LeBron, and LeBron could just, like, do his thing in the way that he sort of did back in the Cleveland Cavaliers of old, which was successful to a point. So I think that that same sort of idea would work with Kevin Love, potentially, because what you saw in that lineup was that the Warriors came off right off the bat, and Tyronn Lue was sort of, you know, on his heels, like, oh, shit, like, sort of got, you know, knocked by, like, a quick right punch or a quick jab to the face, and he didn't correct, which he now has a chance to in Game 2. What the Warriors did is put out their bench lineup plus Draymond, right? So their bench lineup was doing amazing, and then Draymond canceled out LeBron, and it just, like, totally threw a wrench in that idea. But what you could do is, and I think the Warriors probably wouldn't be expecting this from Tyronn Lue, is try to construct that Minnesota Timberwolves team to come out right away in the second round as sort of this bench unit by doing, you know, that Timberwolves team. Dele is a lot like Ricky Rubio, and then J.R. Smith is a lot like Kevin Martin. Either Mozgov, probably Tristan Thompson, is a lot like, you know, Nurkic. And who's that big center on the Timberwolves?
Yeah, I don't remember. But do you remember when they had Kevin Love? They had Anderson Varejao on Kevin Love. By the way, I feel like the playing Varejao, I don't mean this to be insulting, but I feel like it's almost like a kind of, you know, to rub it into the face of the Cavs, you know? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, hey, you got rid of this guy. Now look, he's going to be rubbing, you know, beating you too, and you're going to lose the finals and all that. I feel like that was part of it, you know.
It was definitely part of it.
Yeah, right? It's kind of like getting in their heads in a way. You know, because Steve Kerr, he's a little bit of a kind of smart alecky, you know, I don't know what you call them, but he likes kind of bothering people in a joking
way. He's a jokesker.
Yeah.
Hey, Tim, you know who doesn't have an embargo from AlmightyBaller.com? That's right, SeatGeek.
I love it.
SeatGeek is the greatest way to buy tickets online, and now you can actually sell tickets.
What?
That's dope. Yeah. You know, SeatGeek, for me, is always the first place that I go to look for tickets to a game or a concert. Just the other day, I went to a, I don't know. I didn't actually go to a concert, so let me think of one. Just the other day, I went to a, who's on tour, man? Come on, help me out.
I don't know. Coldplay?
No.
well, they're coming out here.
Yeah.
Well, I went to a Coldplay tour the other day, thanks to SeatGeek.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
I didn't, actually.
When I visit San Antonio, Houston, Dallas, down in the great state of Texas, I get to visit all the different teams with my tickets from SeatGeek, and the best thing about it is those assholes in Houston can't rip me off because SeatGeek uses DealScore, this analytics system. It's an equation that it tells you, the app user, how to get the very best deal on your tickets to Houston Rockets games, San Antonio Spurs games, and Dallas Maverick games. And if you want a really, really good deal, get a $20 rebate by using the promo code Almighty. That's right, Almighty, A-L-M-I-G-H-T-Y, will get you $20 off your first purchase from SeatGeek.
So you can get like a free ticket.
Yeah, basically. And you know what? Perhaps the sweetest victory is that you're supporting the podcast, and you're supporting me, you're supporting the new dog I'm about to get, Shiba Inu.
But most of all, you get a free ticket.
Yeah, Tim. What do you think about that? What do you think about SeatGeek? Have you used the promo code Almighty and got your $20 rebate?
Yeah, I wanted a free ticket, and I supported you.
I love you. So, yeah, help me love you by loving me and getting a ticket from SeatGeek using the promo code Almighty and receiving a $20 rebate courtesy of your friends at Almighty Ball and the Almighty Podcast and SeatGeek. The best ticket finding app, Woo SeatGeek.
Yeah, so the thing is you had Anderson Varejao guarding Kevin Love for about, I don't know, like 10 seconds. And it was very clear that was not going to work. Now, yeah. That was the first time you're like, oh, wow, Kevin Love is one of the top five best power forwards offensively in the game.
Right.
Right? And you're like, oh, wow, you know, this guy can do, he has moves, he can shoot, he can make any shot in the post, you know?
Yeah.
We hadn't seen that for so long, right?
So my point
is, you know, you have Kevin Love against, who's their backup power forward? I mean, you know, who's going to be on him? Okay, take Draymond out. Who's going to be on? I mean, let's say Harrison.
Well, Draymond would be there because that's the lineup that Kerr is going to go with.
Sure, you know, but I'm just saying, you know, Draymond, you know, he has so many duties. I mean, imagine now he's playing almost the entire game because he has to play with the starters at least the beginning of each half. And then he has to guard Kevin. He's not guarding Kevin Love. Who's going to guard Kevin Love? Harrison Barnes? I mean, who's going to guard Kevin Love?
Well, Draymond would probably shift to Kevin Love and then...
No, that's what I'm saying. Iggy. I'm saying unless Draymond Green is covering Kevin Love and playing with the starters, you know, in the beginning of each half. So he's playing almost an entire game. Unless he's doing that, who's going to guard
Kevin? That's sort of my point.
So you're going to wear down Draymond Green. And Draymond
Green... you're forcing... Yeah, that's exactly my point. And I think you're reading me. Is that... You are forcing the Cavaliers at that point, or the Warriors rather. You're forcing the Kerr to use their two best reactions to the Cavaliers to deal with a secondary lineup with LeBron and Kevin Love. Because, like, if you now, after the first round, or after the first quarter, right out the gates again, force Draymond Green to be covering Kevin Love... That's not easy, you know?
It's not. And then, it's going to ruin their team chemistry. I mean, it's going to ruin, you know, Draymond's minutes.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's taking him... It has the potential, at least, to effectively take him out of the game during other crucial minutes that he would be there.
I think he ran into foul trouble last game, right? Didn't he get, like, four fouls or something by the third? He had five fouls, I think, total, no?
Either way, or I guess we should figure
that
out.
Oh, no, he only had one foul. Oh, we should...
Well, he wasn't in foul trouble, which was sort of a problem for the Cavaliers, but this would be like a new potential to put him in foul trouble, because what really puts people in foul trouble, and we saw this a lot in the Raptors-Indiana-Pacers series, in case you were watching that, listeners, is that fatigue makes people make mistakes, especially on defense. And if you're too tired... to, like, go out and, like, contest a shot properly, you'll just slap at the ball or, like, try to poke it from the back. You stop, you know, doing fundamentals and you start making fatigue mistakes. So, they could probably get Draymond Green into foul trouble by going through Kevin Love. But the way that you would have to execute this, it's interesting because this would perhaps be showing the Cavaliers' hand, is you still start Kevin Love because there's a whole mental component to that and a whole optic component to that, where if Cavs fans see that he doesn't start Kevin Love, it's maybe problematic. But you take Kevin Love out at the 6-minute mark and then put in Channing Frye, and Kevin Love is fresh to come out and do this lineup with them.
You know, I think back to when my Lakers, they were, and they had Karl Malone and the glove, and they were in the finals against this upstart Pistons team.
Yeah.
Right? So you had Kobe Bryant, you had Shaq in their primes, Shaq slightly off his prime, right?
Yeah.
Kobe just entering his scoring prime, perhaps you could say. You know, you had Karl Malone, who's Karl Malone. I mean, Karl Malone could jump into the NBA right now and still get, you know, like 12 points, 8 rebounds. I mean, he's like, the guy's like pure muscle. I mean, he can, you know. But, and you had Gary Payton, who was still pretty good. He was okay, you know. He was his defense was still okay. I mean, you know, he was okay. The point is this. You have like four of the greatest players of all time, some good backups, and they... got destroyed by the Pistons because it was very simple. They were old. I mean, a couple of their starters were old. And Malone was injured.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And they got ran out of the building.
Kobe had a pretty bad series too, right?
Yeah. I mean, they got ran out of the building. That's my point. Okay.
Yeah.
And I believe, I mean, this was a long time ago, I believe I read or heard, from my sources that Malone and the glove... They came to the coach, Phil Jackson, and they said, look, this team, you know, won a championship with Ori and Fisher, those guys starting, will come off the bench. And they didn't take that opportunity, you know?
Yeah, that's where I thought you were going with it.
Right?
That was Phil Jackson.
That was Phil Jackson, yeah. I mean, Phil Jackson's great. But, I mean, sometimes you got to recognize, look, we're dire straits. You know, we need to make, you know, we need to recognize you lose one more game and you can't come back, you know, one or two more games. And so, you know, I think that they need to recognize that really having Kevin Love on the same court with LeBron at the same time, and then another couple other brilliant scorers in Kyrie and J.R. Smith. I mean, he's redundant. I mean, they have to recognize that it's a waste of
Kevin Love.
Yeah, I mean, he's having Kevin Love on the score on the floor with three other scorers, you know, and then one of them is a guy who can do everything Kevin Love can do. He's not as great of a 3-point shooter, but I mean, you know, he's gonna take
he's been better. I mean, he's been amazing. Playoffs
this year. Kyrie
or Channing Frye, yeah.
No. I'm saying LeBron. I'm saying you have him on the court with LeBron. LeBron is better at everything Kevin Love does except 3-pointers, right?
Yeah.
And so if you have LeBron on the court with Kevin Love, you know, you toss it into the post to Kevin Love to make him feel like he's a part of the team. But I mean, there's really no reason why you give the ball in the post to him as opposed to LeBron, unless they're, you know, LeBron gets hot, they're double, triple teaming him. My point
okay, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, you know, it just doesn't make sense. If he's there for the offense and you have, you know, playing him next to I don't get it. I mean, they have to, you know, they're not going to be able to keep up with this. And everybody was saying coming to the series that the biggest concern for the Cavs is how is Kevin Love going to match up against the Warriors?
Well, yeah, so I think that if you're playing Kevin Love against the starters or the Warrior starters, like, that's definitely true, but if you run with this idea, you actually have LeBron James out there, but not playing that role. He would be playing a facilitator role, and then on defense, he'd be playing the center, actually, probably. He would be sort of covering Draymond Green for those 1-4 pick and rolls that are so devastating if they put back out Steph Curry. They would have to do some creative defensive stuff, but against the second unit, they could hide Kevin Love in a way that they couldn't against the Warriors starters.
Yeah, you know, I feel like LeBron is at that point. Like, I don't know if he was guarding Draymond Green or not. I feel like, you know, a couple of years ago, he talked about how he learned from Kobe, how you get to 30 years old and you got to, Kobe lost a bunch of weight, and LeBron said, you know, remember he lost that weight and they had the pictures of him, like the Weight Watchers picture, you know. And so, like, you know, you get to a certain point, you're like, look, if I want my knees to hold up for another 5-6 years, I got to, you know, lose weight. And I think someone like LeBron, I think he had two options. It's either you lose the weight and you become more of a small forward, facilitator, fast break running guy, you know, jumping high and all that stuff like we see him doing. Or you keep on the weight and even add some of the weight, and you make the transition into a Karl Malone type guy who can be effective up until 40. You know, either you're power forward or you're small forward. And when you get older, you have to make a decision. You can't carry on all that bulk and be flying through the sky, you know. And so LeBron, you know, he kind of realized that. And I don't think he wants to play like a power forward, especially defensively, you know. And I mean, that's the same problem we see with Paul George. I mean, they tried to force him to play power forward. He didn't want to play power forward. I mean, I think he knows that it's going to wear him down physically. So, you know, I don't know if LeBron wants to guard Draymond. Because Draymond Green, who wants to guard that guy? Look at that guy, right? He's going to punch you and, you know, stab you. And he's going to do all sorts of stuff to you, Draymond Green, right?
Yeah. But, like, I think a couple things. I think that you're spot on for his regular season approach. Because what actually ended up happening is that they made it so that on offense, instead of Kevin Love playing a power forward role or a classic power forward role, he was playing this, like, spot up and shoot small forward role that LeBron would have been playing if LeBron wasn't exclusively on offense playing like a power forward. And then back on the defensive end, Kevin Love was the power forward again, and LeBron didn't have to deal with having to play defense against a power forward. So I think you're spot on for that, but I think that what you see with LeBron is that once the finals come, everything changes, and he starts playing anywhere from 44 to 48 minutes a night, and he starts doing the stuff that he knows, like, he scores within 2 feet, you know, he, like, starts playing the power forward more. They start having lineups with LeBron at the four and then Richard Jefferson and Tristan Thompson. And you start seeing more of these lineups where LeBron James has to cover people like Draymond Green because, I mean, who is going to stop Draymond Green if it's not
LeBron? Well, I mean, look, that's true. But, I mean, with Draymond Green, let's be honest, it's about his passing. I mean, I think the Cavs would be okay with Draymond jacking up the threes. You know, I mean, he hits them once in a while, but it's not something that the Warriors even. The Warriors just kind of have Draymond shoot threes to keep defenses, you know, a little more honest. But I mean, yeah, I know he shoots an okay percentage, but I'm just saying he's not, that's not something that scares the Cavs. So I don't think they're going to be scared of Draymond's offensive game. It's more about his let's say his scoring. It's more they're just scared, you know, of him passing. And that's the problem. And LeBron got lost in trying to do too much. And you know, we saw...
He did, yeah, you're right.
We saw Klay Thompson. We saw Klay Thompson. There was that play. I don't know if you saw, I'm sure you saw that play, where Klay Thompson is just like strolling, like walking to the right side of the court, and like four Cav defenders followed him. And they left, was it Ezeli, I think, wide open under the basket. You know, and so they had these mental break, these mental lapses because of the attention they were paying to Klay and Steph. And in that regard, yeah, they were successful. Look, let's be honest. The Cavs are not worried about Iguodala scoring 20, 25 points. They're not worried about Harrison Barnes. They're not worried about, Draymond Green. And the main thing is this. Look, LeBron, if you look at that first game, the finals, this past game, look how energetic and peppy he looked. You know, he looked like a 25-year-old. Did you see? I mean, he looked like he was just attacking and no one could stop him. And he looked very fast and quick and, right? And they know that that's because he had, you know, had a lot of rest. And yeah, he, in the previous playoff series, he didn't have to play that much. I mean, he didn't have to carry the load. And, you know, he's been saving up his energy, I think, because, you know, look, the last finals... Offensively, I mean, the guy was as close to a one-man team as you're ever going to see.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, yeah, his shooting percentage was bad, but when you compare it to the other guys on the team, it was amazing. And, you know, you take into all his free throws, I think his true shooting percentage probably wasn't that bad. My point is, he knows that, look, nobody else on his team has the ability to, you know, really challenge. He's going to have to carry the offensive load. And to do that, he cannot wear himself down on defense. He can't focus on the, you know, he can't stay in the post and take the abuse of a guy like Draymond Green, who's going to, you know, he's going to elbow you and, you know, wrestle you. And, you know, you saw what he did to poor, what's his name? Steven Adams. He tried to pull his arm out of the socket too, you know?
Yeah.
So he doesn't want to deal with that. He needs his energy. He needs his health for the offense.
So, yeah, I think it's interesting because I think going into the finals, you could make an argument based on history that, like, yeah, LeBron can do both. But you're right that he looked so powerful and energetic at the start of the game, and then he played too many minutes and got fatigued and was making mistakes on defense that were critical, you know, leaving people open, not really contesting the right type of way. And yeah, I think that's a good point. And that sort of opens up another option for the Cavaliers as far as rotation changes. What the Cavaliers could do is, instead of moving away from this bench lineup that was so good, they could, up until the fourth quarter, and then you would switch it up and sort of try something else, which, you know, we can maybe get to. But you could sort of alternate between lineups that just don't have LeBron. He's resting until, you know, the second half of the game. And just feature the offense of Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, because I don't think that in those situations, Kevin Love is redundant.
Yeah, you know, I have a question. Like, Iman Shumpert, right? They gave him $10 million a year, I think, with his new contract, something like that.
Yeah.
Right? And why did they give it to him? He's not an explosive scorer. They gave him for his defense, right? And really, you could make the argument. And they gave J.R. Smith... a lot less than that. I think maybe $6 million a year, you know, for his offense. But you could make the argument J.R. Smith's been the better defender, and that's not saying
he has been. Yeah,
yeah. And so, you know, with Iman, I don't get what the problem is, because his injury wasn't a major injury. You know, you think that he would bounce back pretty well. I know he had an ACL his rookie year or second year, but I mean, he bounced back from that. You know, and he still jumps pretty high. So. I don't see why someone like Iman Shumpert, you know, maybe you put him in the starting, if he's really great defensively, you get defense, maybe not from your big guys, but maybe, you know, you can you don't have to double and triple team Steph and Clay. You know, maybe that helps the big guys play better. That's another thing they can consider. But you know, Mozgov was so great. I really wonder how much he has left.
It would be interesting to see what would happen there. But I mean, I think the Warriors have really discovered this death lineup, you know, that they didn't have last year, and I can't imagine that Mozgov would be able to deal with that.
No, obviously. That's true. Look, I agree with you. My point is starting the game, right? You want to set a mentality. You want to get some people in there, you know, to kind of rough people up. You know, I think starting with your defensive guys and ending with your offensive guys can work. You know, then your offensive guys are fresh. They can play better defense, but they can also hit clutch shots if you need them to, right? But when you start with all these offensive guys, you know, especially let's say the third quarter, you put your starters back in the third quarter. That's when the Warriors, I think they went on that run in the third quarter. I don't know. But, you know, you have all these offensive guys, and then you're facing a team like the Warriors, an all-time great offensive team, you know. Maybe not statistically. I don't know where they rank statistically. But, I mean, in terms of their ability to just basically light anybody up at any moment, you know, you put in a couple of rough-and-tough type guys, like, you know, defensive-minded guys, you set a tone. Then you bring in your, you know, you bring in your Kevin Loves, you bring in your J.R. Smiths, you let those guys come in relaxed. No pressure, they're backups, they're not supposed to score, but if they score, all the better, right?
Huh.
And, you know, I think I don't see how else they're going to keep up with this Warriors team. You know, it's like they're trying to out-Warriors the Warriors. That's the feeling I get with this team. You know, with their whole, like, three-point craze early in the playoffs, yeah. It's like, hey, if we make 15 threes a game and they make, you know, 12 threes a game, we'll win. I mean, you know, it's not, yeah, you can make, you know, 14 threes a game versus the Hawks and the Pistons and the, but you can't out-warrior the Warriors.
Yeah, okay, so that's spot on, Daddy-O. Good on you. I think that that's maybe something that I hadn't fully thought out. So what do you think, maybe expanding upon that? So there is this component about the Warriors being sort of, by nature, a second-half team where they sort of have to get warmed up in the first half, and that's why in the Oklahoma City series they started out slow and then they started to come back afterwards against the Thunder. But I think that maybe it's a good bet, even in Oracle, to try to really put it over on them and... Yeah, try that. So start, instead of Kyrie and letting a fully rested 0 minute Steph in the first quarter, instead of letting Steph just sort of embarrass Kyrie, you start with Dellavedova.
That's the one. I agree with that, but I don't think they can ever do that. You know, that if that backfires, Tyronn Lue's job could be, you know, because I mean, look, Kyrie is a caliber player. And just, you know, I think that he has LeBron's respect, whereas Love has had to fight for his respect a lot, right? But Kyrie...
Well, so, that's the thing, right? You start Dellavedova, but you don't really have to remove Kyrie.
Oh, you start... Oh, I see. Bench J.R. Smith. Oh, I like that.
Move J.R. Smith to the three.
I don't know. I like J.R. Smith, but I say... I think this would be great. You'd go with Delly... And Iman Shumpert, I don't know where his defense went, honestly. I mean, he was bad against that in the game one. He was pretty bad on defense, too.
I think
Shump was pretty bad, too. I think he gave up like 60% shooting or something. It wasn't good.
Yeah, I don't think you can rely on Shumpert.
I don't get it, though. You know, my thing is like, you know, sometimes I feel like starting or benching a player makes a big difference. You know, some players, I think, wasn't Iman starting last year? Wasn't JR coming off the bench or something?
Yeah, I think he was.
Yeah, and he was. Iman was playing good defense last year.
Yeah,
you know, JR.
He was out. He was out for a lot of the year, but yeah, I mean,
then we go back to JR Smith's three shots, right? Because he's playing with all these great offensive players. He's not JR Smith anymore. He's trying to be Iman Shumpert. Iman Shumpert comes in. It's like now he's playing with the backups. Now he's not going to help with the scoring. You know what I mean? It's like you need a little, you know, you need, if you have five players on the court, you want about two or three offensive players, two or three, you know, defensive players, right? And you know, I mean, as great as J.R. Smith has been all around, I think he'd be greater off the bench. Because, you know, J.R. Smith, he's the type of guy, the mental aspect of the game really gets to him. And, you know, if he's a starter and the team's falling behind, it's a lot different than he comes in. If he comes off the bench, he hits 1-3, he's feeling good about himself, you know?
So, yeah, I think that, like, that's, yeah, I think that's interesting. And, like, a big part of why that's interesting. Okay, so what do you think about this? Having a Kyrie, Dele, Shumpert at the 3, essentially, LeBron at the 4, and then either Tristan Thompson or... you know, Channing Frye at the 5.
No, Tristan Thompson. Look, let's be honest. Tristan Thompson, people talk about his contract, which I think is ridiculous, you know? I think that...
Yeah.
I think his contract is exactly appropriate. Not for this year, but, I mean, by next year, it'll be perfect, in my opinion.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, there's a reason he got it.
Yeah, no, there's a reason he got it, and there's some things that are the intangibles, you know? I mean, he doesn't fill up the box score necessarily. I know he's great at offensive rebounds. He's been that way always, you know? But but you don't have Tristan Thompson. You don't have any toughness down low, you know? Who are you going to put? Yeah. You're going to put Mozgov in? I mean, who are you going to, you know, where are you going to get the toughness? You need that. And it's not just because he's fortunate enough to be on that team, but he played defense at, you know, and with the rebounding at the championship level in last year's finals. Him and LeBron were the two guys where you're like, you know, these guys, if their other teammates could play at that level, they'll win. You know, he was playing really hard. He was playing really well. And, you know, and it's not just that he's tough down low. I mean, he's so determined to pick up all those rebounds. But he also, look at the way he moves in the pick and roll. I mean, it's amazing. A guy can be that great of a rebounder. You know, I don't remember Rodman being that good at, you know, switching to guards and whatnot.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, that was a super ISO-heavy time. But
yeah, no, but I mean, but Tristan Thompson moves really well. He moves really well.
He does.
And the thing is with the Warriors, and maybe you can answer this for me, I do not get, you know, when I was watching the Thunder, every time it seemed that Steph Curry hit a big three, it seemed like it was either Steven Adams on him or Ibaka was on him. Or, you know, that one in game 7 when Ibaka fouled him, you know? I mean, Ibaka had no business guarding him. And I know the Warriors are great with getting people, getting the matchups they want. But still, it seemed like almost all the time you had a big guy guarding Steph Curry. I don't know how that happens. Because that, to me, that you could say that cost them the series. Having these big guys on
Steph in clutch moments.
And I don't know how that happens. I don't know how it happens so much. I can understand one or two times, or that, you know, but so much happening that much. And I think if that happens with the Cavs, with Tristan Thompson, he's no match for Steph Curry. Let's get that out of the way. But he's a better match than Steven Adams or Ibaka. He has a slightly better chance. At least he can, you know, okay, he's going to get burned as well. But there's a chance he'll get a little bit burned less than, you know, Steven
Adams. Yeah, no, okay, so... How about you start out, right, with a Cavaliers team that, like the Warriors, are totally able to switch on everything, except for on Andrew Bogut, but that's okay, because Andrew Bogut is not really an offensive threat in of himself. So you have 1-3, Kyrie playing basically the 2, Dele at the 1, Shumpert at the 3, LeBron at the 4, and Thompson at the 5, right? Because, like, there's no one there that can't switch on to Steph Curry, right?
Basically. I mean, yeah. To a certain degree, yeah.
So that's cool. And then, like, your bench unit is...
Amazing.
I mean,
it's amazing now. I mean, offensively, it's got a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, like, you can transition Kyrie into a spot... You could either have Dele or Kyrie as a spot-up shooter... And then put the ball in J.R. Smith's hand, which is interesting, I think.
Yeah, and look, the two-point guard thing, I don't know if, you know, for a while it was a little bit of a craze. You have the two-point guard.
Yeah, you know.
And part of the logic is, you know, both point guards, you know, they have a lot more liveliness to them, you know? I mean, handling the ball is very tiresome, you know?
Yeah, I think this is, yeah.
No, so you play really Dele with Kyrie. Kyrie could have a little more spark end of the game, you know?
Yeah. Okay, so... Yeah,
we need to email Tyronn Lue or something. I don't know how we get this to him.
Yeah, we like this was like the scientific process at work, you know. And then yeah, you have this cool bench lineup that is having you could have those, you know, Kevin Love and
Channing Frye.
Yeah. That 4-5 combo is really good. So for this other rotation that they would have, you'd have Channing Frye and Kevin Love together, which just like totally clears the middle of the paint
for
drives. because like both of them are deadly 3-point shooters. And let's
be honest, LeBron is going to play 40-something minutes probably.
Right.
So you have LeBron now, you know, he gets to play a little bit with Channing Frye and Kevin Love. I mean, yeah, he loves that. I mean, that's what LeBron, you know, with the Heat. And then when he came to the Cavs, he had that vision of his success with the Heat in mind. When he was talking about spacing, right? He was like, I need to get the Kevin Love and those guys. Yeah. Because he got it in his head that I need spacing. And to be honest with you, I was thinking, well, you know, you need an athletic wing too. And this was before they got Iman Shumpert. After they got Iman Shumpert, I was thinking, okay, maybe they kind of... But you need a little bit of athleticism to guard the kind of Paul Georges and the, you know, those type of guys. When LeBron, you know... So I was thinking Andrew Wiggins actually might be even better for them in the short term than someone like Kevin Love. Maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
It's an interesting thought. I think that you maybe run into that problem of having to play then... LeBron at the four all season long, and then in the playoffs, you know.
Wiggins plays the two as well, right? I think, I don't know if he starts at the two or whatever, but I mean, he can be a two. So
yeah,
and they had Tristan Thompson, and you know, but I mean, you know, my point was that, I don't remember my point, but I was saying that's that good.
Well, so, but yeah, I mean, like, if your point was that Iman Shumpert playing at the three is the closest thing you have to an athletic defensive wing.
Right.
Yeah. And then you have Dele and Kyrie. You play Dele on Curry, Kyrie on Clay, which you hope works out. Actually, Iman Shumpert on Clay.
Yeah.
And then Kyrie on, like, Harrison Barnes. Yeah?
Oh, I don't know. Because Harrison Barnes, he's a hybrid almost. I mean, he'll, you know, they'll just keep throwing it to him in the post, you know.
Well,
he plays power forward in the death lineup, as they call it. He's the power forward, right? I mean,
yeah.
Kyrie can't guard Harrison Barnes, but you know, I mean, if you play Kyrie kind of like a free safety type thing, you know, I don't know.
Can you play? Okay, all right. We we probably need to get out of this mentality. But then, like, you close if you have this hypothetical back and forth with these two squads, and then you close out with maybe like Tristan Thompson. Like, either Kevin Love or Channing Frye, and you just literally have to choose whoever is shooting better, you know? And then LeBron and Kyrie and Dele, I guess.
Yeah, you know, Channing Frye, he played, I think, like 7 minutes. I don't know what he played. He played very little that game one.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I understand that he wasn't supposed to have a huge role, you know? They kind of picked him up as a just kind of like to be safe type thing, as a cautious way of to make sure they have enough, you know. But I really am a big believer in veterans, you know, stepping up when you really need them to.
Okay, yeah.
And I think that Channing Frye, you know, he hasn't ever experienced anything close to this in terms of being this deep in the playoffs and having that, you know. And I think he's really hungry. And so here's my point. If someone like Channing Frye, who's very, very good offensively, and let's be honest, he's probably better than Kevin Love defensively. You know, if he's playing with the type of intensity that I expect him to play as a, you know, 33, 32, whatever year old guy who really, really wants a ring, you know, he's been around the league for a while. If he's playing with that intensity, guess what? His defense is a little bit better even, you know.
Yeah.
And so, and I know nothing against Kevin Love. I'm sure he wants to win. But the attitude and the mentality that I saw from Channing Frye suggests that, you know, you give that guy minutes. Let him put his heart out on the line, you know?
Well, so what do you think about this? Like, sort of approaching the fourth quarter from a different perspective because of how the Warriors work. You just, for the fourth quarter, for the last 5 minutes or whatever, you just abandon the idea of trying to stop the Warriors because it isn't going to happen. And instead, you just try to match their offense during that last 5 minutes.
Yeah,
you
put, that's what I've been saying. Yeah, that's what they have to do.
Yeah, yeah.
They have to hold the fort with the defense early on. And then when it cuts to the clutch time and you're shooting back and forth, you want your offensive guys, you want them fresh, and you want them to be in a rhythm shooting the ball.
Yeah.
And the only way you do that.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think about the ending lineup of Frye, Love, LeBron? I I still think you probably want Dele at the two playing off ball and shooting threes. I think that he works well with LeBron in that regard, and then Kyrie.
Well, let's be honest. It all depends on if J.R. Smith gets hot or not. You know, if J.R. Smith is hot, you go to J.R. Smith. But the other thing is this. Another thing is that Tyronn Lue has a short leash for Kevin Love. If Kevin Love is shooting bad, he's going to be out of the game. End of the game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So with Kevin Love, again, like J.R. Smith, you go with, if you know, their shooting percentage, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I've got some good news, Cannon. We've been sponsored by the great folks at FanEssentials.net.
That sounds cool.
You pick your favorite team. In your case, the 76ers.
Yeah, a lot of potential.
A lot of assets. Look really good on an Excel chart.
Yeah, they do.
Let me tell you the process.
Hey!
Pick what size shirt you wear. Pick the gender of the person you want to send it to.
Yeah.
Pick their favorite team.
Or you just do a toss-up and maybe you just...
Just pick some team. Any team. That's the great thing about FanEssentials.net. Every month, you're going to go out to your mailbox like a kid on Christmas morning, and boom, you get this nicely aestheticized box. You open it up, and you see all the greatest and latest fan gear from your favorite team, the Philadelphia 76ers.
What kind of things would be included?
Let's say it's summer. Maybe you'll get a 76ers beach ball.
That's perfect. Ball. Deflate immediately, just like the organization.
Let's say it's winter. Maybe you'll get a hat, woolly scarf, some gloves.
That's cool.
Spring,
one of them.
Maybe some flops.
Really want some flip-flops.
Yeah, you get some 76ers flip-flops and walk all over them, just like Sam Hinkie. Walks all over the fans. Hopes and dreams. You can trade them with your friends. They can give you a second-round draft pick.
Pick a center.
Get a bunch of flip-flops, too large of a size.
Potential to be a really good flip-flop.
I heard there's a certain promo code. What might that promo code be?
I had a prophecy, one might say.
Okay.
The promo code Almighty is going to get you 30% off your first month subscription.
That sounds great.
It is great.
That sounds great to me. There are different size boxes though, right?
Yeah, Kenan, you're so right. You can get a $14.99 rookie package or a $34.99 veteran package. So if you want to splurge on your cousin in Minnesota who's a Boston fan, your cousin
in Boston who's a Minnesota fan.
Yeah.
There's endless possibilities.
If you want to splurge on them, or if you're balling on a budget, 30% is a lot.
It's a lot of percent. Now, if the Sixers had 30% more of a win percentage...
They have a win. 30% of that is a win.
Bad example.
Whether you're a Warriors fan or a 76ers fan, go to FanEssentials.net, get 30% off the promo code Almighty, and start getting the coolest gear. And all the while, you're supporting Almighty Ballin', the Almighty Podcast. So thanks for listening to this promo. You know, go Sixers. I like Nerlens Noel.
His hair, too. I'm an Ish Smith guy as well.
That's some good ish.
It is.
If you're a 76ers fan, you're a good sport, just like basketball is a good sport.
Hey.
We're going to return to the episode. How do you like that, Kenan?
That sounds good to me. I can't wait.
I'm the Prophet.
I'm the Kenan Womack.
Thanks for going out there and supporting us by ordering from FanEssentials.net at some point.
Keep it balling, guys.
Keep it balling. To ball is awesome.
Eloquent.
Yeah, I like it. So... You're from LA. You can drive to Oakland.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about it, but, you know, I don't know if it's right, if it's, you know, if it's tampering or, because they haven't given me an official job, the Cavs.
So here's what I think. Okay, this is a good thought. It should be like when Nicolas Cage steals the Declaration of Independence in National Treasure, right? Where it's like, stealing the Declaration of Independence or kidnapping Tyronn Lue is not the right thing to do, but like, there's a national treasure at stake. There's a ring at stake, right? There's this ultimate thing that needs to happen. And I think if you kidnap Tyronn Lue and explain, this is why I needed to do this, you know, everyone understands.
Yeah, that's a good. I did not see that movie. I'm more of an Indiana Jones guy, but I think the plot is pretty easy to figure out. You know, just...
Okay, how about this then, right? There's a couple of different Indiana Jones possibilities. Like, you could sort of, you know... You remember when... Which one of those is that when he has the bag of sand and he switches it out for the idol and then the boulder rolls after him? Is that Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yeah, I don't... I watched the Indiana Jones movies when they came out. So this was like 30 years ago, but yeah.
Yeah, So we have to figure out some way to tie this up. Okay, let's see.
Well, yeah, I mean, we have to hope that Tyronn Lue Because the thing, like, you know, we have to hope that he, you know, has the nerve or has the, you know, what the word is. I don't know. I don't want to say the word.
Well, it took two brilliant minds to think of this idea. I mean, like...
Well, look, but you know, the way Tyronn Lue has treated Kevin Love sometimes in the fourth quarter, and David Blatt was worse, you know, and Tyronn Lue respects David Blatt. David Blatt showed some disrespect to Kevin Love sometimes, right, with his benchings, remember? So, you know, I think they have that in their mind that, look, Kevin Love, we're not going to let him, you know, hurt this team, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it really comes down to how much job security Tyronn Lue has. I mean, you bench Kevin Love, and let's say they shoot 30% in the first quarter or something, you know?
Well, I think that's interesting, and we might, basically depending on how you're feeling, we might go to this. But I think that LeBron is sort of making the final call on, like, a lot of this stuff, and I think that if Coach Lue decides to sit Kevin Love because he's not having a good series... It wouldn't be Lue that gets replaced, especially because the Cavaliers already just fired a coach and they need to keep their coach. It would be Kevin Love that would get replaced.
Well, you would think so, but let's not underestimate the Cavs, right? I mean, they had Mike Brown. They were paying him for two separate contracts at the same time. They had fired him so fast that they were paying him for two contracts and he wasn't even on the team. You know, the Lakers, when they got Dwight Howard and Steve Nash. And yeah, they were paying Mike Brown, then Mike D'Antoni. They were paying so many coaches, three coaches, you know. So these franchises, when they develop these expectations for themselves, they don't care, you know, because, you know, coaches' contracts, they don't count against the salary cap. These guys got money, you know.
I mean, don't you think LeBron would rather replace Kevin Love?
Yeah, but I don't think it works like that. I don't think LeBron actually makes the shots. I think, you know, when you see LeBron's dissatisfaction and you know that the other players respect him so much and that's going to rub off on other players, then you get a little scared. You're like, oh, this could hurt the morale, you know? But I don't think it's like that direct where LeBron can say, we're going to bench this. It doesn't work like that. You know, I mean, LeBron, look, stays in the game sometimes when the coach, does, you know, or sometimes they'll call up a play and say, I have a better idea, and they'll listen to him, you know? So you could say he's almost like an assistant coach, you know, in the sense that he gets to have some input sometimes, but he doesn't make...
Well, I mean, like, I'm saying, like, he's, like, the GM, right? That, like, if he wants Kevin Love to be traded, then, like, that would happen.
No, I don't know about... I don't think...
I mean, like, so he keeps signing these one-year contracts,
yeah, in that
right?
sense, yes. If they sense... That's what I mean. If they sense his dissatisfaction, then they know the whole thing could crumble. And so that forces them to take that very seriously. But you remember the rumor, or I don't know if he came out and said it, but LeBron James, guess who he wanted? Guess who he wanted as coach instead of Tyronn Lue? A guy,
Mark Jackson,
a guy you did not show a lot of respect to, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, here's the thing, right? Mark Jackson, he's been in the NBA community for a while.
Yeah. It's his personality.
Rumors like
look,
that,
it's his personality.
Normally, when
people
they don't
like his personality.
Come into being,
he makes.
I'm sorry.
I'm saying that players like him because he makes them feel good about themselves.
Unless
you're Andrew Bogut. Other than that, he makes you feel good about yourself. Look what he did for Draymond Green. Draymond Green. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Mark Jackson was a big reason that we even know his name.
What? He was playing like 4 minutes a game.
Yeah, but Draymond Green was the guy, you know, Mark Jackson, you know, Draymond Green came out and said he was the guy who gave me a chance. Remember the last finals when they made the finals or whatever? Or after they won the finals?
Yeah.
He was playing about 22 minutes a game, Mark Jackson's last year.
Draymond was?
Yeah. I mean, this is a second round pick. Look, second round picks aren't supposed to make the team, right?
Yeah.
But he was giving him time and he showed confidence in them and yeah. I mean, look, Draymond Green, I mean, he only became a top, I don't know what you want to call him, top 20 whatever player this year. I mean, last year he was known as a deep, you know, let's not forget, just last summer, people were saying he doesn't deserve a big contract. He only deserves a big contract on that team. But other teams shouldn't be paying that. Remember? Now, let's say he hit the free agent market now, he's getting a max, right?
Yeah.
So let's not.
Well, I mean, he would have gotten the max, like.
Last year?
Last year, too.
I don't think so. No. He didn't even get the max on the Warriors.
Yeah, but like he gave up the max.
Yeah, but I don't know what other teams would have offered. But, you know, the word around the mouth or whatever was that he would not have earned that kind of contract outside of the Warriors. You know what I'm saying? But anyways, my point is this. My point is this, that Draymond Green was a project. Draymond Green, he doesn't fit into one, you know, position. He doesn't have any one incredible physical gift like, you know, like the stars, and the, but he has an all-around game that took time to develop. And Mark Jackson, he attributes Mark Jackson to helping him, you know, get to that point. So my point is this. Mark Jackson, the X's and the O's, I don't know. But in terms of a guy that played, because remember Steph Curry, remember how upset he was when they fired Mark Jackson? And Klay Thompson, I believe. They were very upset. You don't think they know the game, but they know the basketball, right? But they knew, you know, that this guy, because of his attitude and his ability to get us to rally around, and, you know, he always plays them as the kind of everybody is the haters and we're the underdogs. He knew how to kind of instill in them this mentality where they're a cohesive unit, right? And then you have a guy like Steve Kerr with all that championship experience, all that coaching, you know, time he spent with the two greatest coaches of our generation. Mm-hmm. And he takes this nice team that really likes playing together and all this, and he sophisticates it, you know? So my one point is this. Tyronn Lue, his coaching job right now, okay, he's doing, in a sense, what they wanted from Mark Jackson, which is getting the players to like each other, to get along, you know? Yeah. And I think that's kind of what LeBron was thinking, is that this team has bad chemistry right now. You know, and we see what bad chemistry. Look at the Houston Rockets. If you want to know what bad chemistry, I mean, honestly, like that team, you could put the greatest coach. If you have those players with that attitude, and they're, you know, they didn't want to play together.
Well, I think I think he was right in that regard. But so right before we sign off, I guess, like the last thing, I guess. So you're saying that it's maybe more of a possibility that if they don't make it, if they get, like, knocked out of the finals again by the Warriors, that, like, it's more likely that Lue gets replaced than it is that Kevin Love gets replaced?
No, I don't...
Because I think they've all rallied around Lue.
What's that?
I think the team has rallied
around Lue. Yeah, I don't think Lue gets replaced. That's not... Yeah, okay. What I mean is that you don't make those really bold decisions unless you really, I don't think Lue gets replaced, but at the same time, you sense that, hey, I've been handed this team without any, you know, the second or third best team in the league without any head coaching experience. It's a great gift, and the organization saw me as one of their own. You know, so that's a different scenario than if you hire a big name coach. You know,
well, so and don't so, you think that? Don't you think that? I think that, okay, so I think that they would keep Tyronn Lue, especially now that there's been so many coaches who have been fired and are on the open market, maybe like a one-year contract with a really experienced assistant coach. And then I think if you have two playoffs in a row and it's become totally obvious that Kevin Love is a bad matchup, I think that, like, if, like you're saying,
one more game. Look, one more game if they bomb, you know, defensively. Yeah. If they you know, whatever, if they have another bomb,
yeah,
then you have the license to go radical and, you know, to make
it
radical.
And don't you think that totally might happen?
Yeah. That if, look, one more horrible game, yeah, I could see basically anything Tyronn Lue does, I don't think people are going to complain. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. No, I'm saying that would be an extreme measure at this point to bench Kevin Love. Yeah. To bench Kevin Love would be pretty extreme because they've really tried to paint this picture that we made such a great decision. And look, you know the funny thing about Kevin Love is, forget trading Andrew Wiggins. They give up $20 million. You know, they're paying him, you know, $20 million a year, right?
Yeah.
And for a team, you know, what does that translate to with the cap tax and the luxury tax? That's going to be...
Oh, they're like...
Yeah, no, I'm saying $20 million. Let's say when you count how much that takes you over, it's probably closer to 30. I don't know, whatever. That's a big investment. You know, for a guy who apparently is hurting them more than he's helping them at times. And you know, I think that to make themselves look good, they're not going to give up on him, you know, too fast.
I think that if the Cavaliers win the series, he's going to stay.
Oh, yeah.
If the Cavaliers don't win the series, and for the second year in a row, they get knocked out in the finals by Golden State.
Look, the only way you trade Kevin Love is for a Blake Griffin. Okay.
No, dude, Blake Griffin would be garbage next to LeBron.
I don't know about that, but...
oh, dude. No way.
I don't know. I mean, that's...
They have the same game.
They have very similar games. I agree. Except, I mean, you know, LeBron's much better at the ball handling. But my point is this, is that, you know, if you're going to trade him, you want to, one of the top power forwards who's on the trade market. And who else is there, really? And the thing is that I think the Clippers actually would be the ones you'd say, why would they trade for Kevin Love? But I think from the Clippers' perspective, I think he's a perfect fit.